Read more stories on spirit-led living when you subscribe to Charisma Magazine. Go to mycharismashop.com and enter in the promo code CPN to receive 10% off the price of a subscription. This is John Matarazzo for the Charisma News Podcast, and it is my pleasure to welcome back Jonathan Feldstein from the podcast The Inspiration from Zion. It is wonderful to have you here to talk about what is happening in the Israeli elections, which is happening just this Tuesday, which is a huge deal because there's been several elections in a short period of time. And Jonathan, before we start into what's happening currently, could you give us, for our, especially our American audience, just an understanding of how the political system in Israel is just a little bit different than our two-party system here?
Yeah, a lot different, and something, well, I'm living here in Israel almost 20 years, something I'm still not 100% used to. When you spoke about how we're actually in the fifth upcoming election, you made my heart race, and not in a good way. It's very stressful, to be real honest. But it's a very, very different electoral system. I kind of wish we had something more American on a regular basis. We have a parliamentary democracy in Israel, which means rather than voting for an individual person as the head, as a candidate, usually a Democrat and a Republican, sometimes you'll have a independent or a libertarian or something else in the U.S., we vote for a political party. And that party fills the one house of parliament that we have. It's called the Knesset. There are 120 seats. So in order for anybody to form a government, to be the winner, so to speak, you need at least 51% of the 120 seats, or 61 seats in the Knesset. Yeah. The thing is, in the 75 years of Israeli history, there's never been an instance of one party winning that majority. Wow. So there's always the need to form a coalition. And therefore, when we vote for a party. That party designates the leader who is its prime minister candidate, but it is not always the party who wins the most votes who then becomes the next prime minister. Each one then has to start fighting to see who can build a coalition of at least 61 seats. And sometimes it gets really hairy. The outgoing government, we call right now the caretaker government, has eight different political parties ranging from pretty far right to very far left, including the first Israeli Arab party. Wow. So it's very complicated. And the last thing I'll say about it is when we vote, we're not voting only about who we want to win, but we're also considering if that person doesn't win, who might that party or person, who might that party or person fall into a government with? And so it's kind of like a three-dimensional tiered system that we have to figure out strategically. How are we voting? My wife and I are talking about voting for completely different parties, and I can get into that. But she's talking about voting for a party that might not even make it into the Knesset, which we call a wasted vote. Oh, wow. So it's very hairy. And that's one of the reasons my heart rate went up as soon as you started introducing the topic.
Well, I'm after our conversation here, I hope you can take some chamomile tea or something like that to help bring your heart rate down, because we are talking about the election in Israel, because it is such a big deal. Yes. As you said, there's been five within the last several years. Yep. Now, it's not like you get a set term limit. Correct. Where like the president of the United States gets 4 years term, and then they have to run for reelection, or their term, or you know, after they get two terms, then you know they've been term limited. But in Israel, like you lose favor, you can be out, and it can happen pretty quickly. And so that's what's happened five times within the last couple of years.
4 years. We're the election next week. Will be the fifth election in 4 years, which means we've been in campaign, a constant campaign, for the last 4 years.
Yeah. And so I know everybody here in the United States can relate to how frustrating it is to see political ads on every commercial break, on every billboard, signs everywhere, you know, even YouTube and Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. Like, you get political ads everywhere during this season. We're in our midterms right now. Right. So our elections are a week after Israel. So, you know, we're kind of in that same season, but you've never had a break.
We haven't had a break in over 4 years. And what's funny, I wish I had the system in America, because in America, if you're a staunch Republican, you know to stay away at this time from your Democratic friends, unless you want to lose friends or vice versa.
Right.
Here, with, I mean, currently there are 8 political parties in the government, but there are 39 parties that are running for Knesset.
Wow.
It's kind of like a shotgun. You don't know. You could get on an elevator with somebody or have lunch with somebody, and the political conversation comes up, and you will, unlike in America, you'll know, okay, Democrat, Republican, don't have the conversation. Mm-hmm. But here, you could be having a conversation with somebody who's your who thinks every way you do politically, but wow, is voting for a different party and is very passionate, and we get into a lot of political debates and unpleasantries as a result.
I'm sure. I'm sure. Now, here in the United States, I mean, we have some other third parties, but we kind of just wrap them all together in that, correct, in that third party, which is, there could be many parties there, but it's not, you know, the big ones are Republican and Democrat. And then we just have like the independent or third party, which you look at the grand scheme of things, it makes minor differences here and there. But
yes,
you very rarely get a third party candidate actually elected. But here in Israel, you have 8 different parties in the Knesset, and you've got
in the current government.
In the current government, you've got more in the Knesset. Yeah,
right.
And so, yeah, you could be walking down the street and there's so many different parties. And if everybody's as passionate about it as people here in the United States can be, that would be, it would be like walking in a minefield, I guess.
Yes, indeed. And one family, my family is probably a great example. We'll probably have people voting for, I've got how many, five kids who vote are voting age. So between my 5 kids and my son-in-law, so that's 6, and my wife and myself, we're 8 different people voting. And I would guess we're probably voting for 4 different parties.
Really? Wow.
And some of those conversations around our dinner table can get very heated.
Wow. So that is just such a, because I've grown up in the United States and I've spent most of my time understanding American politics when it comes to just political information and just that political experience, what you're talking about is a very new thing. But, you know, I've been kind of following it for a while, so it still fascinates me, even though I've been aware of the differences.
Yeah.
But what is the common or the current polling situation? What are people thinking is going to happen?
There's the last polls. It's actually fascinating. I don't remember how it works in the U.S. The last polls before the election, our elections are not always the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November, but they're always on a Tuesday. Mm. So as a result, the last polls are allowed to be published only on the Friday before the Tuesday. So just got our last polls today. And I will say that with very, very little variation since the beginning of this immediate political season, the 5th election that we're coming up, we've seen very little variation. Mm. And the sad thing, the frustrating thing about that is it's really coming down to literally thousands of votes.
Yeah.
And it may become another political stalemate. I made a joke the other day that if this vote becomes indecisive and we end up with a 6th vote in the spring, at least we have a biblical principle that we can rest after 6, right? God did, so we will. But unfortunately, I'm not so sure that that's going to happen. But what's happening right now, we're seeing in the polls, they're largely, we can go into the details and dig down if you want, but they're largely 2 blocks. Used to be right and left. Today, it's not so much right and left as it is for former Prime Minister Netanyahu to build a government with him and against former Prime Minister Netanyahu. Now, generally, those kind of fall out right and left, but not 100%. And what we're seeing is just in the polls that were released today, 4 national polls all came out showing that Netanyahu may eke out a one-seat majority, the ability to form a government with 61 seats. Their problems, from my perspective, very deep problems, mm-hmm, in who he'd form a government with, but maybe not. But mm-hmm, maybe he's going to get 59 or 60, in which case we have a stalemate. And the big thing is I'm completely undecided. I'm between 2 parties, and those 2 parties are not polar opposite, but very different. Hmm. And I know still today, days before the election, 96 hours, I think we have, there are many, many people like myself, and we're going to go into the booth. We actually put a slip of paper in an envelope. It's very charming, the mm-hmm. old-fashioned way we do it. But we're going to put it. We're going to put this slip of paper in, impulsively making a decision to do something on the spot there. And I believe that there are at least tens of thousands of votes, and I think each seat is about 20,000 votes. Wow. So 20,000 people who don't know what they're doing and putting their ballot in for one or another party could be the big thing that the polls, when they talk about margin of error, I believe there's a margin of error to the margin of error in our low votes. And our margin of error is 4.5%. So even if we look at those as being accurate, you're still talking about a margin of error that is pushing one government or the other away.
Yeah. So you said something that was interesting, and I'm just kind of curious into your thought process with this. You said you are undecided, and mm-hmm. I don't want you to like totally just like get it out there like what it is. But in the United States, we have basically two parties.
Right.
But you've got a lot of options here. But you right. actually said something that really was interesting. You said they're very different from each other.
Yeah.
How are you divided between two things that are very different? It would seem like if they were yeah. very similar, it would be hard to pick one or the
yeah.
other.
Yeah. I've been voting for, I guess, about 40 years. And I've never been undecided like this. Mm-hmm. I've held my nose and voted for candidates who were, sure. you know, the phrase, the least bad option.
Right.
But I've never, ever, in all of the elections in America, because I'm an American citizen and here, never had this situation. Hmm. And so part of the situation is I'm really fed up. Hmm. Part of it is I'm very firm with what I don't want to see as an outcome. So my vote needs to be, I think, needs to be strategic, not just to sure. vote for a party that I can live with, though there are none today, mm-hmm. and that's a challenge. Is one maybe, but hopefully that vote won't empower somehow trigger be one more vote to see the emboldening of a government that I don't want to see. So that's number one,
that makes
sense, and the other one, and you if you came to my town, actually I look forward to the day that you do. Mm-hmm. I'm in a 90%, 95% modern Orthodox, what they call pejoratively settlement. So we're right of center for sure. To hear the number of people who are planning to vote for parties that are left of center is extraordinary. And one of the things that's a factor for me, and I've written about it, I've done podcasts mm-hmm. about it there with on Inspiration from Zion about the status of Israeli Arabs. I think it's so important that Israeli Arabs be integrated that mm-hmm. this year, this election, when we've had the first year of an Arab party, interestingly, an Arab Islamist party mm-hmm. in the government, I honor that. And I'm thinking that I want to support Israeli Arabs to be more and more integrated. And I might be the only person out of about 12,000 people in my town who votes for this party. My wife, it's a good thing the door's shut. My wife hates that I'm saying that, but I'm really so torn. And I think it's a good principle. And when I speak about it with friends, they'll nod and say, yeah, I hear you, but no one, but we're, I have an equal number of friends who were decided as undecided.
Mm. Wow. So that is really interesting. You bring up about the Islamist party, the Ra'am party.
Yeah,
right?
That's it. That's the one.
And so this last term was the first time that they were actually had a seat.
Yeah.
How was that seat used and what kind of influence were they able to have?
So it was the first. There have been Israeli Arabs probably in Knesset since day one for
sure.
75 years. And there have been, we now have three different Israeli Arab parties running in this current Knesset. And Ra'am, which is the one that you correctly identified, is an Islamist party. And that troubles me. That does trouble me. Although, frankly, there is a lot of social conservative values that they support that I support. So I can hang my hat on that. But this is the first time in 74 years that an Arab party joined a governing coalition. Mm. And from my perspective, I think that's great. Is people need to understand that Israel is a thriving democracy. 20% of our country, actually 21%, are Arabs. And I'm not talking about the Palestinian Arabs who are my neighbors with whom we have a long conflict. I'm talking about Israeli citizens who are Arabs, mostly Muslim, a small percent of Christian. And they're 21%. That's one in five of us who are Israeli. There's a lot of crime in the Israeli Arab community. They don't do military service, which I'm okay with. Mm-hmm. They also don't do civilian national service, which I'm not okay with. I think they need to be integrated. And I think Israel is the perfect petri dish in order to show how Jews and Arabs can live together and do live together, but they need to be integrated more. So when Rahm came into the government, they wanted to see more of a commitment to fight crime. They wanted to have more housing, budget toward more housing, but there's a lot of illegal housing that goes on in the Arab community, which creates friction. And the one thing to their credit that they didn't push, the head of Rahm, his name is Mansour Abbas, he said, Israel is a Jewish country and always will be a Jewish country, but we want our rights as Arab citizens. The one thing that he didn't push, which is the whole issue of Palestinian nationalism. And to me, that's a very big deal. So I could, I can see myself supporting his party. I do support the complete integration and involvement of Israeli Arabs in this fabulous democracy.
Yeah. So you said something about the military service, but also the civil service. I know everybody needs to spend 2 or 3 years in military service in Israel, as you're
correct.
So what is the civil service?
So in place of military service, you can be exempted if you have a sibling who was killed in a war or terror attack. If you're ultra-Orthodox, the ultra-Orthodox community is largely exempt from military service. The Israeli Arab community is exempt from military service. And Orthodox women, like my daughters, are exempt from military service, each one for different reasons. In the case of my daughters, because the army is not really a religious, a modest place where you want to have your 18-year-old daughters go off to serve for 2 years. Girls do two and
guys do
boys
three.
So my daughters will choose to do, have chosen to work in it. What I would look at is sort of like a domestic Peace Corps. They've worked with underprivileged kids. They've worked with special ed. Some of them actually were able to spend a year overseas working in Jewish communities. One of my daughter's friends works in her civilian national service in what's called the Prime Minister's office. But we know that that's a euphemism for working in the Secret Service or something of that nature. So they don't say it. There are people who work in hospitals and schools and all kinds of things. And the Israeli Arab community, by and large, does not. And I think that's a huge mistake. I would love it if all Israeli Arab 18 and 19-year-olds would work in the hospitals, would work teaching my kids Arabic, teaching me Arabic. I mean, there's so much that we could do together, and then they would feel more integrated. But by giving them the exemption, as with other elements of the society, you end up having a sense that they're not, a sense that they internalize, that they're not part of us.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Well, I'm glad we kind of went on this rabbit trail a little bit, because that was fascinating. These are issues that I don't think most people in the United States would think about, because the issues that we're facing right now are the economy. That's probably the biggest thing right now. I mean, there's the economy. We've got Roe v. Wade being overturned.
Right.
And so that's something that's big that the Democrats are focusing on and trying to rally their base around. The economy is still probably the biggest thing. And every time I hear a poll, it's the economy that people are worried about.
Correct.
And then we're still, recovering from the COVID lockdowns. And I know that Israel, your economy has been affected. You've been affected by lockdowns and just how everything has been dealt with the coronavirus. What are some of the issues that most people consider as the most important in Israel as they're casting their vote?
So traditionally, the top three issues are security, and security.
Okay.
The economy also is very, very significant now. For the same global reasons, our economy is challenged. Things are much more expensive. We have the privilege of paying probably double in gas what America pays on average, and that's because of the big tax on gasoline. But food and all that, and I think now really one of the issues, we haven't really spoken about it too much, But really, the issue that this vote comes down to is a vote basically on Benjamin Netanyahu. Mm-hmm. He's our longest serving prime minister. He served 12 years consecutively, plus another 3-year stint in the 90s. And for a whole lot of reasons, probably not for a conversation now, but if he sure. gets the most votes and tapped to become prime minister again, it might be a conversation we want to have. It's kind of a referendum on him
sure.
and the political parties that he would easily align with mm-hmm. to support him as becoming prime minister again. That seems to be the big issue beyond security.
Mm. So we're definitely going to have another conversation after the elections just to see what the aftermath is.
Yeah.
But as you were talking about Netanyahu having, you know, there's parties that you know would basically kind of line up with him.
Yes.
What's stopping those parties from just joining his party and just creating this massive block that would be almost impossible to deal with?
That's an excellent question. That's a fabulous question. I think what stop everybody from doing that is that they want to have their own influence. If I'm the head of what's called the, I forgot even the name of the party, Jewish Home, I think is the name of the party in English. Mm. If I'm the head of that party, I want to have influence. I want to be able to sit. If you're Netanyahu and I'm a guy named Bezalel Smotrich, and I'm the head of the Jewish Home Party and you're the head of the Likud Party, uh-huh. I want to be able to have a conversation with you after the elections and say, okay, Bibi Netanyahu, we're going to join your government,
uh-huh.
but these are our terms, right? Mm. They're going to play hard. And I want this seat. I want to become a defense minister, and I want this person to become minister of interior, and I want this mm-hmm, person to mm-hmm. become minister of the finance. And we're expecting these legislative agendas. Now, if I get subsumed into one big party, probably there's less influence that I'm mm-hmm. going to have. The question really is, which is also fascinating, if Netanyahu were not the head of the Likud government, you would have 1, 2, 3, maybe even 4 political parties that are currently running on their own and considered largely part of the non-Netanyahu camp that could easily be subsumed back into the Likud party because their founders all broke away from the Likud party because of differences with Netanyahu. Hmm. And if they were to run together, then sure, then we would see like in the old days of Israel, the founding days, where you would have one party getting 40, 50, maybe even 55 seats in the Knesset.
Wow. That is something to think about, but from what you're talking about now, I don't think that we're going to see that.
Not yet.
So as we're wrapping up here, how can we be praying for these elections in Israel?
Ooh, now you're making my heart race again.
get that chamomile tea ready for you.
I'll put it in order. We need to pray for a conclusive and good outcome. Mm-hmm. We need to pray that our enemies are not going to use the political indecisiveness that we currently have or may see as a result to flex their muscle and use this as an opportunity to attack us. And we need to pray that whoever is tapped, if we're privileged to have somebody who can lead a government, that person, in this case, more likely than not a male, is filled with a divine purpose and understands that he is the privilege and the awesome responsibility of serving as prime minister of the very recently reestablished Jewish state of Israel, mm-hmm. which is not just the home of the Jewish people, but the fulfillment of so much prophecy.
Yes.
And if our prime minister had that, I think a lot of the other things would fall into place.
So this is definitely how we can be praying for the elections in Israel. And believers, we need to really focus in on this because, you know, Jesus tells us to pray for the peace of Jerusalem, you know, the Bible tells us to pray for the peace of Jerusalem. And we know that God's eyes are on this nation. And so if his eyes are on it, our eyes need to be on it too, and covering it in prayer because there are threats all around. And as Jonathan said, security are the main three issues that people care about and they vote about. And, you know, we have their neighbors all around them, that some of them have publicly stated many, many times that we want to push Israel into the Mediterranean.
Correct.
Into the sea and totally destroy them. And so we need to pray for the protection, pray for the peace, and pray for the politics of Israel. And Amen. If we can do that right now, you know, leading up into the election, which is on Tuesday, November 1st.
Correct.
And so as we're praying for our elections here in the United States, pray for the elections in Israel. And Jonathan, I look forward to talking to you again to talk about what has happened and what we can look forward to after the results of the election come out. And I just want to encourage people to check out your podcast, Inspiration from Zion, right here on the Charisma Podcast Network. You can check that out. He's got a lot of very interesting conversations, and it really helps believers in Jesus understand the roots of our faith, because it goes back to the Jewish faith, and we are grafted in. So it's important for us to understand where the inspiration for our faith really does come from there. And also, his website is genesis123.co, not C-O-M, it's just C-O. You can find his Genesis 123 Foundation there and see what incredible work Jonathan is doing in Israel, because he's actually right there. We've been talking. I'm in Orlando, Florida. He's in Israel, and I just love this technology that we're able to have this conversation and to be able to be up to date on what's going on. And so, Jonathan, thank you so much for being on the Charisma News Podcast, and I look forward to having you again.
Thank you, John. It's always a delight. Thank you so much.
This has been John Matarazzo for the Charisma News Podcast. God bless you.